Welcome to Correctional Commentary, a podcast about the ins and outs of corrections, an uncensored view from behind the walls, hosted by Robbie and Caleb.
Hey everybody, this is your host, Robbie. I'm missing my co-host along with me today. He is out due to some family issues and being sick. So I do have Smith here. He's our first guest of our podcast, so we're excited to have him. So if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been in this line of work.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Robbie. I appreciate the opportunity to come on this podcast. I've been a corrections officer for 5 years now, northeastern of the part of the nation. It's kind of cliche in a way, but I actually kind of got into corrections simply because of a family tragedy. And I wanted to help my community and especially the community that I didn't really get to interact with much. So corrections kind of drew me in as a way to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely relate to you on that. I've had some family members that's been in prison, and there's a lot of stuff that needs to be changed. And that's kind of why we wanted to start this, to, you know, bring a lot of stuff to public's eyes. So we got a few questions for you, and we'll get it rolling with that. So with you being in corrections for 5 years, is this your first job, like straight out of school? Or did you move from another field?
In the state I'm from, it's very difficult to get into corrections at 18. Some of that's changing now recently, where they're starting to start looking at 18-year-olds to come in and work. But for me, I couldn't get in at 18. So I wanted to build my resume enough to be able to put my name into corrections. The first job I got straight out of high school was actually at a drug rehab that was funded by the state Department of Corrections. So inmates who were at the state level could come to that drug rehab, and part of their conditions of release or getting on probation or parole for the state was completing that drug rehab. And I worked there out of high school. I also, later on, I worked at in a surveillance department in a casino that is exactly what it sounds like. I just watched the entirety of the casino to make sure if anything was going bad, I knew about it.
Yeah. That's not really... It's what a lot of people don't understand is whenever you move into this line of work, a lot of times it's just by misstep. It sounds like you knew what direction you wanted to go in. Now, is corrections a pit stop for you, or is it something that you want to see? You know, are you retiring? Are you wanting to move on to like a police force, maybe state police?
I don't have a specific direction of where I want to head just yet. If it ends up retiring from corrections, I'm totally happy with that. I started young enough where even if I were put in my time in corrections, I could probably still go somewhere else and put in even more time and walk out possibly with two pensions. But as far as like, if I had somewhere that, if I wasn't doing corrections, that I'd probably want to get into, maybe like state probation would be something I'd consider. Weirdly enough, counties in my state require that you have a college degree to be in probation, whereas the state department does not. So they would take my corrections experience and work with that, where the county would, if I didn't have a degree, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, so you mentioned before that you worked in a drug rehab. Now, is that something that got you wanting to kind of gear towards corrections, or is that just something that you knew Because it kind of sounds like you're on the more, like, reform side of corrections, to where, you know, you want to see, you know, any correctional officer that goes into this line of work for the right reasons, you know, we all want to see these inmates improve and also, you know, always reduce the recidivism and get these guys out and get them, you know, to be a functional part of society instead of getting out. I mean, you know, like me, we got countless stories of, especially these young kids that come into the prison, and man, they just don't care. They're quick to swing on you, and you can tell that it's almost like they didn't grow up with any kind of role models. So that's part of the reason that I wanted to stay in the line of work, is because there was a lot of these kids were their first positive role model on somebody that can actually follow the rules and, you know, and expect anything of them. So that's kind of a little backstory on me of why I chose to go into corrections. So is that so how does it line up of why you wanted to go into corrections?
So kind of to backtrack a little bit and go back to what your first question was. So in high school, I had the opportunity to complete a technical school program for my senior year of high school, and I completed a criminal justice course. I knew probably around 15, 16 years old, I knew I wanted to get into corrections. I knew that's what I wanted to do. Because of my completion of the technical school, they were able to get me a job out of high school. And that rehab contacted me and got me a job. Knowing that I had to build my resume, that was why I took that first step. As far as kind of like on like a pendulum, I've heard it compared where corrections is kind of compared to like a pendulum. Right now, the way it looks like it's swinging is towards the reform and handling the recidivism rates among inmates, where on the other side of that is just simply punishment and do their time and kind of act like a hammer. As far as that goes, I think to put it as simply as possible, I tell inmates all the time, like, this does not have, whatever it is that you're in here for does not have to define you. And I'm saying this in the nicest way possible, like, if this is the only time I ever have to see you again, this is great, because you'll never have to be in here again. And, you know, I tell the guys when they're getting out all the time, don't come back. I don't even care if it's for a visit. Don't come back here. You go live your life, go be successful. Don't come back here.
Yeah. So with you being in corrections for 5 years now, if you could go back and visit, you know, your rookie self whenever you first started, what would be, you know, that piece of advice that you would give yourself, you know, to make your, whether it be to make your career easier, whether it would be, you know, to change your ambitions or anything like that?
I think I'd give myself two pieces of advice. The first being that you getting into corrections is difficult. You know, the inmates and the people you work with can either make or break you. And don't let the people who want to see you fail let you fail. Don't let it influence you. Several COs in my past, you know, they did nothing to help me progress in my career at all. And I kind of took that to heart a little bit. I came in with the expectation of corrections being a brotherhood, and I was unfortunately sorely misunderstood with some of that. So I would just add a piece of advice to myself is, and I'm not saying in general, I'm saying just for that small part of, you know, being that rookie, kind of going through that hazing process of that year-long process, trying to earn the respect of the people you work with. I kind of came in thinking I'd be immediately in, you know, in the club per se, but so I just, you know, I just say, right, you know, hang tough, ride it out. Don't let, you know, those people kind of cloud your judgment. And the second thing is, you know, at least in my mind, there are some rare cases where, in my experience, inmates like want to hurt you, but in the majority of the cases, they just want to do their time and get out. They're not looking for an issue. They're not looking to start a problem with you. So, you know, just treat them as you would want to be treated, you know, just don't go in there thinking you have to act like a big shot to prove something to anybody. Like, it's not worth the it's just not worth the aggravation to do that.
Okay. I like all that. So how is being in corrections changed you as a person?
I'd like to say there's been more positive changes to me as a person by working in corrections, but if I did say that, I'd kind of be lying a slight bit.
Positive or negative. You know, it's one thing we do want to do is, you know, we want everybody to know, you know, positive, negative, doesn't matter, what to expect if, you know, for these guys that are wanting to come in this career.
Yeah, so I'd say definitely a positive for me, to start off with a positive, is patience. Corrections taught me patience better than anything ever could have. Patience with people, patience with, you know, just when shit hits the fan, it's just, you're going to have patience when stuff comes down the pipe, and it just always ends up, something ends up screwing your day up. So you're just going to have some patience to kind of just roll through it and move on. As far as negatives, I'm a lot more cautious in public life than I used to be. I always, like, if I'm just going to Walmart, going to get groceries, for example, or whatever, I'm always just looking around to see, you know, I live in a smaller community, and when is the next time I'm going to run into a former inmate, especially hopefully one that doesn't have a problem with me, and my family's around. So, you know, I'm a lot more cautious in my public life now than I was before I got into corrections.
So with that being said, what all kind of classifications of inmates have you worked with so far in your career?
I think I've worked with pretty much every kind that I can think of. I got the murderers. I got just the petty stuff. I think probably the slightly funny, very least concerning guy I had, he was on probation for something or other, but he ended up getting pulled in for a 90-day jail stint on drinking beer while he was fishing. You know, very chill guy, just likes to drink, and, you know, just didn't want to follow the rules. And so, unfortunately, I'd say the most common type of criminal that I deal with on a daily basis is my sex offenders, my child predators, my sexual deviants, just the worst kind of humanity that you can think of. Where I'm from, we've nicknamed them Chetties. I don't know if you're familiar with that term from where you're from, but we call them Chetties. So
where we're at, we, you know, they're referred to as chomos.
Okay.
So kind of circling back, I want to kind of add to this question. How do you, as, you know, your person, because, you know, I struggle with this still to the day, whenever you deal with these child predators and the sex offenders, us as correctional professionals, which is what we are, how do you treat them with dignity, I guess, would be a best way to say, because, you know, a lot of people think, or probably under the impression, that because they're in there for whatever crime they committed, you know, that we treat them like dirt. It's just not the case. And I find myself struggling with, you know, I don't even like looking up people's charges because, you know, that could sway me on how I treat one versus another. But, you know, with you working primarily with those classifications, especially now, how would you say, how difficult is it for you to, you know, to keep your personal feelings separate from your professional?
I you brought up a good point earlier. I don't really, unless I'm there for their booking, I don't look at their charges. I don't really, because if the more details I know about what they did, the worse I'm going to feel about it. I tend to stay away from the fine details of the investigation that they're in. I try not to do that. Of course, I know, you know, even if I wasn't here for their booking and I came in and they just a new guy and I don't know who they are, just based on where they're housed, I know what they're in for, just basic logic. But as far as it, you know, how I treat them with dignity and things like that, I send this message very quickly to guys that come in. You know, if you show me respect, you're going to get it back. I don't care what your charges are. You want to act like a dirtbag though. Like I'm not going to give you the time of day then. Ghost you.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, that's a perfect way to put it. You know, you get treated accordingly. So what can you tell us about your, cause I know whenever we were talking off camera, you said that I believe it was your prior facility had closed down. You know, what can you tell us about that facility and how it was ran and, you know, how it differs from, you know, the one that you're at now?
Yeah. I was kind of hoping you'd ask me something about this. I have enough, grief and dirt to lay down upon that whole facility for 2 years of a worth of a podcast. They were so poorly managed, so poorly ran. There was no oversight whatsoever from the commissioners, in my opinion, whatsoever. Perfect example of that. In our subcontrol room, down in near our Alpha and Bravo blocks, we would have to put tarps over our control panels when it rained because the water would leak through the ceiling and short the control panels. And through the entire 5 years I was there, it was never fixed. So, management was just atrocious. I've said to everybody that I've worked with in the corrections, I don't know why upper management thinks this way, but if you've never worked in a jail and you don't know how to run it and you don't know what a jail's like, why are you hiring wardens that don't know how that works? If you've never worked in a jail, why are you a warden? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense to me. The basement, we had an indoor rec room and an outdoor rec area. When it got, it was storming or it was just too cold out, you know, I'm up in the Northeast, so it gets pretty cold up here. We would have an indoor rec room for them if the weather called for that. But if it rained, the entire basement where that was would flood. And so we would have to go down there and pretty much put pumps and mop it up.
So was that facility, was it like that just because they let maintenance just, you know, let it go, or was it just an old like facility built, you know, back in the 50s, 60s?
I believe the facility was built in the 80s. We did have a maintenance department, but their pretty much job was just to keep the basic, you know, light bulb went out, go fix, you know, put a light bulb in, or, toilet broke, they would install a new toilet for an inmate. Just the basic stuff as far as like actual upkeep of the jail, it just didn't happen. And I 100% believe that it was a funding issue. The county that I worked in absolutely did not want to pour in any sort of money towards that building. They saw it as a money pit, and after several years of union negotiations, they didn't even feel it was necessary to pay us anything really significant either. So they reviewed their budget and they said we'd rather pay another county to hold our inmates than to keep this place open. So they shut it down.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, we went into that into kind of a discussion of, you know, like the whole management situation as a whole, like with the Department of Georgia, or not department, with the state of Georgia. I don't know if you've seen that video of the complete misdirect that they go on and feel like solving a staff shortage is going to be like, oh, you know, here's like a 50 cent an hour raise, and thinking that that's going to fix the problems whenever, you know, they're like avoiding the true problems. So let me ask you this. I mean, with staffing problems, I would probably say, is that an all-time low, especially from my period being back in like 2014. You know, we weren't always this badly staffed. I don't know how it is like up where you're at. You know, if like, let's put yourself in the commissioner's shoes, or with you being county, you know, in the sheriff's views, what would you do to fix the issues with, you know, like with that facility as a whole, you know, like how do you fix, like what would be your ideas on staffing, on, you know, just improving the morale?
So I guess my question would follow up with that. Do you want an immediate fix, or do you want a long-term plan on how I could solve that over a long period of time?
Let's do both. Let's do, because I mean, obviously a short-term fix or a quick fix isn't going to be a long-term fix.
Okay.
And it's
what I would do is a lot of public relations quick fix. I would be going to every local college, every local tech school, every local any local institution, and promoting our, you know, our jail, our prison, to criminal justice majors, to psychology majors, to social services majors, any sort of thing like that that would be interested in either internships or an actual career in corrections, and get that out there. Very, very few, at least for the county level where I can speak to, I don't ever see us or any county going and doing that at all. You know, the state and the feds do it quite a bit, but not the county at all. So I would be getting those young 21, 22 year old college people who are just graduating or almost graduating, and get them in the door, and seeing if they'd be a good fit in corrections, because obviously not everybody's going to. As far as a long-term fix, at least for me, the only reason I ever only consider leaving corrections at all is because I have no real pathways to move up in what I'm doing. I feel like corrections, especially in the county level, do not have levels of advancement for anybody. And I understand, because it's usually a smaller facility in a county, so they don't really have the huge staffing numbers that other places have. It took my old jail, it took them 10 years to reinstitute sergeant roles after we begged the union to fight for it. I want there to be levels of opportunity advancement, because if you're trying to pitch to a guy trying to get into corrections, oh, you're going to be a CO, and if you ever think of trying to move up, you can forget it, because there's only four lieutenant jobs and only four guys can get it, and you got 30 other people who've been there 20 years, and you're just never going to see that. It's just never going to happen for you in your career unless you go somewhere else. So I wish there was more opportunity advancement in jails. Obviously, pay is a huge one. It's always going to be the big talking point of people. Like, can you, in a corrections career, afford to support a family and be a main factor in providing your kids with the things they need? At a county level, sometimes it just depends on the level you live in, where you live.
I mean, that's part of the reason the facility that I worked at, because I started working at a facility on the state level, and for some random unknown reason, it was that one facility in the state that could stay fully staffed. It got to that point, and this was back about 2 years ago, and kind of following like in line with being able to afford to do that job as a whole, like, and support, you know, your family. Most correctional officers, we support our family with overtime, unfortunately, just because the pay is so low, and I feel like it's starting to kind of move upwards to where it needs to be. But yeah, I mean, that's something that I think a lot of these, especially young kids, need to know coming in. I hope you're okay with working some hours, because it's there.
Sure. To put it in retrospect for you, I don't know how your state and your area does hiring, how hiring corrections officers work. Where I'm from, majority of the time when you come into a new jail to work as a CO, you're starting at a part-time level until you kind of get out of your probationary period and you've proven that you can actually do the job, and then they consider you for full-time if there's an opening for one. And for retrospect for you, when I started in corrections back in 2019, I started part-time. I got like 3 days a month, and I was making $13 an hour.
That's about where I was at whenever I started. Now, what made you decide to go, you know, county versus state, or did you ever work for the state?
A lot of the requirements for the state require you to have at least a year or two in corrections before you can apply for the state at all. I couldn't go to the state directly.
Wow.
Even if I wanted to. Now, obviously, that's changed because they're so low staff. They've waived a lot of those requirements in order to get people in. But when I was getting into corrections, I couldn't at that point. I didn't have the requirement prerequisites to get into state. I have in the past, over the years, tried getting into state, but for various small issues that were very, very minor, they wouldn't, they disqualified me and wouldn't let me in. So,
yeah. So circling back around to, you know, we stopped at, you know, the income would be like a long-term fix. You know, what other kind of, is there any other things that you could see to help with a long-term fix?
Yeah, I would certainly look into, employee programs. Very simply, you know, I read a statistic recently that corrections officers have the highest rates of PTSD among all working people, including the military. And the fact that most, at least from my experience in this local area, most jails and their health insurance coverages only cover a very basic number of sessions with mental health professionals, if they even cover them at all. You know, I would really like to see employee programs improve, where the physical and mental health of corrections officers is taken seriously. The average lifespan of COs is way below the national average. And getting some health initiatives, getting some mental health help for COs would be something that I would push for all day. I would do it, and again, all places vary from a standpoint of like getting time off and things of that nature. But I would like to see that improved for some places where getting 6 days a year, I think, is unacceptable.
No, for sure. Yeah. So, you know, all right. So I guess that kind of like, I guess pretty much wraps up that, you know, I will add, you know, I've seen some cool stuff, you know, kind of with the mental health thing with New York is a perfect example. They just opened up a facility for staff, you know, that has Serenity stuff to help with mental health, you know, gyms, and it's something, you know, as a whole that can help a lot of people that I feel like is looked over. So, and I guess I can roll into this next question from something, how you made a comment about PTSD. I mean, even anything from anxiety to depression is higher than any other profession. Now, why do you think that, or feel like corrections is not seen as a branch of like first responders? Because I think us in corrections, that's a big, and it may not, and whenever I worked for county, it wasn't as big of a thing, because for some reason, whenever you work in county, people, like, and you're a sheriff deputy, people view you as a first responder, and as even as law enforcement, but especially whenever you're in a prison, people just don't believe that you're a first responder, you're worthy of that title. Why do you feel like that is?
So just to clarify, from in the area I'm from, COs are not deputized. We're not sheriff's deputies at all. We're a totally different sphere. We're looked at the same way as the state guys are. We're just COs. As far as why the public, I would think, perceives us that way, because we don't respond to emergency situations in a public eye. We're not rolling up in a fire truck. We're not rolling up in an ambulance. We're not rolling up in a police car saving people. We're behind closed doors. We're behind walls, and people can't see in and actually see the good we do on a daily basis. We don't have that public eye in there to see that what we do. And a lot of people in the public don't think that the people we're saving are actually worth saving. So, you know, even if we could get eyes in the public to see what we're doing, there are some negative perceptions about working in a jail that, unfortunately are never going to go away. We're saving the lowest lives, the lowest worth of human lives in some people's images, you know, that it's just not worth that hero's welcome that other first responders get.
Yeah. Now I really love the way you put that. Cause I mean, you know, obviously like me, I consider myself a first responder, and I'm sure you do too. Can you give me an example of just maybe a most memorable or anything why you feel like you're a first responder and something that you responded to?
Unfortunately, I'm going to go heavy here because it's always the first thing comes up in my mind. I was working night shift at the time. There was a code 300 called over the radio. What that means is that there's either an inmate attempting or is currently attempting suicide or is currently committed suicide. I ran to the housing unit that the call was made for. I ran in, and an inmate kind of ingeniously tied a bed sheet to the bottom bunk, and kind of just sat down in like Indian style, sat down with it around his neck. So looking in, you think, you know, it's dark, you know, if you didn't have a flashlight on, you'd never even see the thing. You would just think, oh, he's just sitting in the dark, just kind of just praying, meditating, you know, whatever it may be. But fortunately, the CO who found him actually, you know, was paying attention. I came in there. I, along with another CO, were able to cut off the noose. I then proceeded to do CPR for a continuous 30 minutes before EMTs arrived. To this day, I can still hear the crunch and crack of his sternum and ribs under my hands. To this day, I still have flashbacks and dreams about that incident. Unfortunately, we weren't able to save him in time. But the county and everybody knew that we did everything in our power to make sure that guy walked out of there alive. And unfortunately, it just didn't work that way.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I want the public to know of, you know, just because, you know, I'll say it again and again, we're considered, you know, the redheaded stepchildren of law enforcement. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, we go through stuff like that. And if they were to hear that, you know, that story that you just told, you know, they would really think twice about, oh, you know what, he is a first responder, because, you know, the definition of a first responder is, you know, being the first one in and, you know, trying to save somebody's life. Or, I mean, you know, that, because, I mean, even police officers, you know, that's their primary, you know, their goal is not to stop crime. Their goal is to protect. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, that's our job, is to protect these inmates from themselves, from myself, and, you know, from my fellow coworkers, whether they be correctional staff, whether it be counselors, or, you know, administration. So, you know, I feel like there's a big disconnect from TV, you know, like what they put on, you know, like Locked Up, stuff like that on TV. You know, it gives the public a misconception of what actually goes on. Which I guess leads into my next question. You know, what do you feel that Hollywood and just has gotten right and wrong about the correctional field? If anything, right?
So, I think first off, what they definitely get wrong a lot of the time, and I like that show 60 Days In, I hate that crap, because most of the time it puts COs in a very negative light. You'll have people on there all the time like, why aren't the CEOs stopping this? Or why aren't they doing this and this and this? And when they have no background information, they have no idea what their minds are or their training. You know, I've been trained since I've been to the academy that if you witness a fight between inmates and you're the only one, you're calling backup and you're standing there watching it before you go in there. You're not mm-hmm. going in there by yourself and, you know, possibly being held hostage or things of that nature. You know, you wait for people to show up and help you. You don't just rush in there, guns drawn and guns ablazing. They make it seem like COs are lazy their purpose is to make sure that the people inside suffer beyond suffering. I don't like that. That's not the mindset of a majority of COs I've worked with. Of course, I have those couple of idiots that I've worked with that are not mm-hmm. that think that way. But, as far as what they've gotten right, unfortunately, this is a very good COs, good moral COs hate this when this happens. But unfortunately, it happens way too often. Where Hollywood gets COs who there's always every prison show, there's always a CO sleeping with an inmate, every single one. And unfortunately, absolutely, it happens way too often where I can't just say, oh, that's just an over exaggeration of Hollywood, but it happens so often that, like, I can't just,
for sure.
You know, for good moral COs, it's disgusting. It's not, it's illegal, first of all, regardless if they consent or not, it's illegal. And you know, it's just disgusting to even consider doing something like that. But I, unfortunately, Hollywood got that one right.
Yeah, I mean, I've in my last, I would say 6 months, between my facility and just ones that I've heard of, even in my state, I've probably heard of, you know, at least five or six, you know, get walked out for relationships with inmates. But I mean, that puts everybody in jeopardy. I mean, it puts that person's, you know, motives above, you know, what it's supposed to be, you know, and at the end of the day, protecting each other. So, I mean, that's really all the, it's really all the questions that I have for you. Is there anything, before we get off here, is there anything you would like to add or let the public know of just someone? Cause you know, we're kind of in the southeast. So we're on the complete opposite ends of, you know, I'm sure y'all have different gangs that run stuff up there than we do down here. You know, what is there anything that you would like to let the public know about your profession and about, you know, something that you take great pride in?
So the first thing I want to shout out to people who especially aren't in corrections and aren't familiar with this. You know, corrections is a brotherhood, and I have to shout it out. There is a week in the year where we celebrate corrections officers and we celebrate the work that they do. It's called Corrections Week. This year it falls on May 4th through the 10th. If you have anybody that you know that works in corrections that you know works extremely hard to protect the people in his community or her community, please just a thank you would just really make our day to say that somebody actually gives a crap. Unfortunately, I have to say it that way. You know, over the years we've had donations from churches and things of that nature. You know, just keep us in mind when that time comes around that we have, the community also has our backs too. As far as just some background about corrections and getting into it, as far as corrections goes, I've heard it several different ways. There was a famous quote from, I think it was Jailbreak. It was a movie. One of the inmates made a joke to one of the COs and said, it was something along the lines of you're too dumb to pass a cop's exam, so you end up making less than a mailman, which is a CO. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you that, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of the public perception is that, I've heard it before where COs are just dumb knuckle draggers, where we just, unfortunately just don't have, either we're not intelligent enough or not fit enough to become a cop. Weirdly enough, COs in my area make more than cops do.
Same here.
Local sheriffs in my area don't make anything. They don't make anything for what they do. They don't make anything. You know, unfortunately that's just the way of the world. Corrections is not for everybody. It is not for everybody. There are plenty of people who think that they can do it, who simply can't because of the mindset they have coming into it. Either they think that they're big and strong and that they can take on anybody and anywhere, anytime. It just doesn't happen that way. You'll have a very long, illustrious, and profitable career as a corrections officer if you simply just know how to talk to people. If you just know how to communicate with people especially people who you really aren't familiar with, if you can simply just have a one-on-one conversation with a person that doesn't have the same interests as you, you will be successful. And that might sound crazy to some people. I don't know this guy. I don't know anything about him. We have no common interests. Like, how the heck can I talk to him or her? You know, it's if you're good at communicating and being around people, it comes easy to you. And over the years of corrections, I've slowly gotten better and better at it. I went in as a CO trying to prove something and came out thinking, what am I doing? I simply just got a rapport with these guys instead of just came in, you know, pepper spray out and taser ready. And if I had done that, you know, if I had just done it another way, I would have been much better.
Okay. Well,
I love corrections. It's definitely the career for me. I don't know what I would have done with my life if I hadn't decided on going doing corrections. I don't know where I'd be. I am pretty comfortable with where I'm at in my life because of corrections.
I mean, ultimately,
without saying that, I definitely want to put this in somewhere because I feel like any decent CO is going to feel the same way. I would give up my life for my brothers and sisters in gray to make sure that they
agree with. I agree with you 1,000%. But you know, and I'll touch just a little bit before we wrap up. Something that we haven't announced, but we will be on Corrections Week. It is in the works to where we will be posting a video and a podcast every day about positive notes and, you know, all hopefully will work out and hopefully we won't be able to miss it. But we're definitely going to make a point to do that. But for everybody thinking about going into corrections, you know, just take the leap. You're either gonna sink fast, or you know it's gonna be the best decision you ever made. So until next time, guys,
and you're gonna know pretty early on whether it's right or wrong for you. You'll know your first three or four days on a block if you can do this or you can't.
Yeah,
it's pretty learned trial by fire.
So guys. Like always, if you'll have any questions, reach out to us. And until next time.